Blog Talk Radio. Jared.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Tuesday, July 16th, 2013, and thank you for tuning in to American Freedom Watch Radio. We have it every Tuesday with Karen Schoen and John Estabrook. And I have, as usual, I've got one little thing I want to say before they get the show going here. Everybody knows. Oh, there's a lot of noise in the background. I'm not sure what's going on there, but I'm hearing an awful lot of sound effects there from somebody. Not sure what the sounds are. But anyway, only thing I wanted to mention, of course, we've all heard a lot about the Zimmerman case in the last few days, the last few weeks. And we need to realize what has really happened here and how we've actually turned racism into a for-profit business in this country by the likes of those like an Al Sharpton. But what I'm going to ask you to do is when you think of Zimmerman and when you think of Trayvon Martin, specifically Trayvon Martin, I want you to think about Mark Slavin. And if you do a search on Mark Slavin, you will see this was a 50-year-old white man who was brutally attacked and beaten up by two young black individuals, like 18 and 19, I believe, were their ages, using hammers. And this happened in Sanford within a matter of a month or two of the Trayvon Martin ordeal. And I'm just thinking, you know, why didn't anybody talk about that? Why is it okay for blacks to kill and harm whites? Why is it okay for blacks to harm blacks? The only time that anybody gets involved in this race deal is when it's a light-skinned, now we have white Hispanics, white Hispanics on blacks. That's the only time, but that's because that's when people like Al Sharpton can make money off of it. So I think it's pretty despicable, but I really want you to think about a Mark Slavin who was brutally attacked by two black individuals with hammers and everything, and you never heard a word about it. It was all in Sanford right around the same time as the other thing. So just please check into it. On that note,
well, Sally, you know, I want to, you know, Karen and I had talked earlier in the day as part of preparation, because that is where we want to head this first 30 minutes or so of the show. I was torn by the actions of the media in the initial response and the so-called our political leaders. You know, there was an opportunity for the police in Sanford to do their job, a district attorney to do their job and investigate the crime, if it was a crime, and to investigate the murder that took place. They did that. They followed through and did their job. And in their doing of their job, they found no need to charge Mr. Zimmerman. Now, that's a fact. I mean, we cannot run from that. There was no evidence that George Zimmerman did anything but protect his life. So now, what led to the prosecution? It was media and political racists like Barack Obama, Al Sharpton, and Jesse Jackson. They failed to prove hatred and malice of intent. Because let me tell you something, Eric Holder and the DOJ sent FBI agents into Sanford, Florida to find the proof that George Zimmerman was a racist. And what they found was a man that had been raised with black children in his mother and father's home, a man who dated and carried a black young lady to his prom, a man that just prior to this incident had taken on the Sanford police because they had neglected a homeless black man, and he stood in defense of this homeless black man. So now when the FBI agents who are there on the part of the Department of Justice to investigate Mr. Zimmerman find no action, there was no criminal action that could be taken against him. So what do? They elicit Florida's Attorney General and Angela Corey to illegally prosecute this man and have him arrested. if anyone's civil rights have been violated, it is the rights of George Zimmerman. Now, we have a jury, six people that both the prosecution and the defense selected as jurors. That process is, they both have the selection in the process. These ladies performed and did their job. They found with reasonable evidence of facts, that it was borne out that Mr. Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin in protection of his life, self-defense. And now for anyone to continue to perpetrate that there was an injustice carried out upon Trayvon Martin is against what Lady Justice stands for. This nation is built on justice for every man. And trust me, there was justice. I don't think George Zimmerman was given proper justice because he should have never been arrested. And the evidence will bear that out. And let me tell you, the indictment that will come down on Angela Corey is a just indictment. They withheld evidence from the defense. This man's prosecution was with intent to carry out a racial divide of this nation. As Americans, we cannot stand by and accept racial divide when it's coming from our leaders. And there's nothing that Reverend Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton have offered to the black population to improve a single aspect of their lives. And their actions now to carry further protest against this man. I fear for George Zimmerman's life. If I was George Zimmerman, I would be scared to death of having someone gun me down. It's a shame that allow this to continue as Americans.
You are so right, John. And thank you all for joining us tonight. This is Karen Schoen and John Estabrooks, and you are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio, brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and Red State Talk Radio. And please look at our websites, Agenda 21 Today and America Is My Name. John, there are so many lessons, Sally, there are so many lessons that we could learn from this Zimmerman trial that we should be proud of as a nation, regardless, against all odds. This man was proved innocent. There was not enough evidence to convict him, and the jury did the right thing. And for that, we should all be proud. What has come after it, Sally nailed it when you said, racism has now become big business. And this has always been the race baiting, the race issue. I have many, many friends, as we all do, who are black, and we had these conversations. And Sally, when you said, why is this continuing, it's because we do not have honest conversations anymore. And we have to start having honest conversations with both black and white neighbors, because racism is something that is learned. You don't get born. And when you are born, God does not say, you're going to be a racist and you're not going to be a racist. Racism is a learned behavior, and they're learning it in school. That's where all of this is coming from. Because the other piece that I have gleaned from this investigation, and I focus on Rachel Gentile. Folks, we have to listen to her. Listen to her communication skills. Listen to the words that she said. Rachel Gentile is a product of our failed education system. What she is exhibiting, they are not cultural nuances. They are not mores that people learn when they grow up as a black American. They are not things that you experience. They are things that are learned, and they are learned in school, and this is where it's coming from. It comes from all of these programs that teach collectivism, that teach the individual is unimportant, that teach that you don't have to learn to read and write cursive writing so that you can't read and understand our founding documents, that you cannot read and understand and have individuality. When I started talking about this yesterday, somebody just sent me a copy of a dollar bill from 2012. I want everybody to take a look at that dollar bill, and I want you to look at the Secretary of the Treasury's signature. Jack Lew does not know how to read and write cursive. Look at his signature. How do you distinguish his signature from somebody else who just wants to make a little scroll? You can't. Cursive writing is part of our individuality, and that's one of the reasons why it's being eliminated. In addition, cursive writing teaches eye-hand coordination, and that's why it's so important. So what we really need to take a look at as a nation, and now while everybody is focusing on Common Core, we need to take a look at what are the real skills, what are the real programs that will actually assist a child in learning to read, write, and do math, and then look at the textbooks and see if they correlate to that, because they do not. And what we will have is an entire society of racial Gentiles as American citizens if we do not correct what is going on in our schools. As a former teacher, this is beyond my comprehension that a child, a woman, should be speaking, should not be able to read and write, should be a result of the billions of dollars that we have spent on these programs that teach nonsense instead of skill sets that will make people successful. Her ignorance, Rachel's ignorance, and Trayvon's ignorance, and they're slashing out and calling out and calling George Zimmerman gay and a cracker. This is not something that they were born with. This is something that is learned behavior. And if we want to stop, we have to turn around and focus at the cancer. And the cancer is the school. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, but Karen, you know, and that's correct. You know, this is something that's learned. Racism is learned. And we have to go to the intent. Why do we have leaders? Why do we have a media that hopes to expound on racial empathy? What is their design for that? Because trust me, this was all thought out. This was a mission.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Division, destruction.
That's it, John. You just nailed it. The purpose of racism is division. Because if you think I'm a racist, or you call me, what do they used to call the Jews? They called them kikes. You call me a kike.
Uh-huh.
Then I'm not going to talk to you.
Well, no.
I'm going to think you hate me. I'm going to think all kinds of bad things about you, John, and therefore you and I will not have a conversation. And the day that you and I stopped having a conversation is the day that we start putting the nails in America's coffins. Because if we don't talk about a conversation about race, we're not going to talk about one about the economy. We're not going to talk and have a conversation about immigration. We're not going to have a conversation about any of the important issues that are facing us as a society today. We're going to stop talking. And that's the purpose of all of this, to separate people, put them in little groups, give each group a different set of rules, and then have them go out and not talk to each other, because I don't know what your rules are. You don't know what my rules are.
so we're not going to talk to each other. And that's exactly what they're looking for.
And Karen, this goes even bigger than that, though, because if we go back to when the incident took place, and we look at this president and this administration and the things that were coming to light that have been perpetrated, the lies, the injustices, the failures of agencies, the actions of agencies, right now, this is no more than a distraction.
Yes.
If Americans allow themselves to be distraction, will we continue to chase down the final results of what took place in Benghazi and how we lost four Americans to to an attack, a terrorist attack, that we still are struggling with the nation to have the proof and the evidence, the truth, share the truth, so they'll avoid that. The Internal Revenue Service. You know, you've got an economy that's absolutely in the downward spiral of collapse. And if we're distracted by Trayvon and George Zimmerman, a lie. This was all perpetrated. This man should have never even been arrested. And for them to do this was to create, by design, a distraction, to have us focused and divided. So that we would not do what, Karen? They fear the greatest tool to restoration is first that we embrace that our rights come from our Creator, a God. And that as Americans, when we unite, we are the most exceptional people on the planet. We have done more to advance humankind than any nation on the planet when we stand united as Americans. People are allowing the media, this administration, the Department of Justice, to divide us. Unite as Americans. An American has no color to me. I do not recognize a color when I see an American. If you tell me you're an American, I see no color. What I see is a like-minded person, a freedom and liberty-loving individual who hopes to improve and to have the great promise of what America is. Yeah, and that's what these guys are totally out to destroy.
Exactly. Somebody sent me an email this morning and they said, Karen, you have to start talking about social issues. And you know what my answer to them was? I will be happy to talk about social issues when all of the other issues that are more important are straightened out. Because if we can't straighten out our economy and we can't put back in the box these government regulations and we can't stop the government from stealing our land and our businesses and our lives, and if we continue to allow communism to infiltrate our schools, then abortion is going to be a moot point. Immigration is going to be a moot point. Obamacare is going to be a moot point. So you've got to talk about serious issues. And just like you said, John, we have to be Americans, and we cannot allow things like this. We should mention them. We should talk about them. We should get the lesson from them, because remember, just as John said, this is a lesson. So when something like this happens, you know what I do, John? I go look in the online and I say, what is happening in America today that this is on all of the media? What's going on behind the scenes that we should be knowing about, because this is on the media? And sure enough, there is always going to be a something else. Just as you said, John, where is the information on Benghazi? Where are we with the IRS scandal? Where are we with the Blue Wave takeover of private property, with the infiltration of Common Core? Which is more important, George Zimmerman, who has already gotten justice, or America, which is about to lose everything? And I,
yeah,
I
because here's let me tell you what the underlying. Let's go now to where this will ultimately lead and where this president, because let me tell you something, folks. This guy is a Marxist, a leftist by design. He has an intent. Well, why would I want to separate the nation on race, and why would I want to highlight the Zimmerman case? Why would I want to bring my buddy, my criminal accomplice, Eric Holder, and have Eric Holder go back into Florida again? Well, guess where this will lead, folks? It's going to lead to international laws for gun control in the United States. If you don't think these clowns are not going to attempt additional gun control, you better wake up, and you better wake up today. The division of America can only be totally accomplished when they disarm us. And guess who they will use? The strong arm of their buddy, the United Nations. Because they'll say, you know, Americans won't allow it. But look at this poor man gunned down in the streets of Florida. And there's going to be, trust me, there will be lawsuits filed on an international basis. And the UN will look to bring their gun control treaty and to America. So don't think that this is just this is not happenstance by this man and these communists. They have a mission.
They do, and that's why I always say when I talk to people, we have to understand that everything is connected. Nothing happens at random. Everything happens for a reason, and everything is based on lies. And man, put that in perspective and apply that to every single issue that's going on today. And once you start applying it, it's like an oh my goodness moment, an oh my God moment. I get it. I understand it. I see why they're doing that. I'm not going to fall for that. That's what they don't. That's
there you
what
go.
They want you to do. Don't get suckered into the meaningless, emotional dribble that is encircling the issues that are the most important. And the issues that are the most important is America, our private property, our rights and freedoms that are being jeopardized by having a, as John said, a communist, Marxist, Muslim in the White House who wants nothing more than to make sure that the Muslim flag is flying over the White House in 2015. That's their goal. We're getting close, I can feel the noose tightening. In the meantime...
Well, how many, you know, Karen, and how many of us have received, I guess when you look at Alex Jones and some of the folks that really are rampant with a lot of conspiracy theory, but also facts. What would riots across the nation, you know, we're looking at this weekend having 100 cities with protests. All right, now, hopefully they will be nonviolent protests. But if they become violent protests, if the media and this president and Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, the people, the leftists who want to destroy America, can raise it to a high enough fevered pitch to where there's rioting that takes place, what would President Obama be able to implement across the nation?
Oh, those words, martial law, ring a bell? I'm coming for your guns, ring a bell?
Yeah.
And by the way,
bye-bye Constitution.
That's right. Let us not forget the food safety bill and all of those executive orders which say, if I declare martial law, John, you got food in your pantry? Give it over.
Yep.
Because it's mine. It's not yours anymore. Whatever is yours is mine. Whatever is mine is mine. That's the way this crowd works. So we've got to be careful. If there's demonstrations, stay home. Don't go. It's not important. It's not what this is about. Be smarter than that. be so smart that instead of going to the demonstrations, you're glued to the TV to see what, or the internet, to see what other executive orders or bills he's going to try to get through, or what he's going to say, what in his vocabulary is he going to use to tell the people what to do. You know, he told the people in Egypt that they had better not arrest any of the Muslim Brotherhood leaders. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Yeah, he can't tell
people here,
he can't lead the people here, but he's really great when he goes over to Africa. And you know what was even scarier, John? And this should be a clue for every person that listens to this and is in the sound of our voice and should be tweeted out. If Obama meets with Bush and makes nicey-nice with Bush, and then Jeb gives Hillary an award for being a great promoter of liberty, tell me these two parties are not the same. Folks, wake up. This is going to be a critical election in 2014. Vote for the person. Don't give the party a dime. Give the person, either give them your attention with what you can do and how you can help and volunteer, or give directly to the person. And run for office if you can, and humanly possible. Run for office in your school board, in your county, in your state. It is going to be critical that you are in control of your town and your county and your state. Because if this yo-yo has his way and he gets to play with all of those neat toys, our little AK-15s, or whatever they are, AK-47s, I'm getting my guns mixed up. Anyway, I don't think they're going to work against the tank. I don't think they're going to work against the drone. This is for hand-to-hand protection of your private property, which will come into place when there is no food. Because I was listening to Stossel over the weekend, and somebody was reporting the news, and he was showing the increase in food prices just in the last month went up 5%. They have gone up almost 50%. And now what's going to happen when the fuel prices go up, especially in the winter? Folks, be prepared. It's so important. Be prepared. But most important, don't get suckered into these meaningless displays that you see on the national media. I don't think anybody even, every time you flip the channel, all you got was George Zimmerman's face. George, we've seen enough of you. It's time to see somebody else. It's time to learn that food prices have gone up 30% and your salary has not. In the meantime, they want to bring in immigrants, another 30 million people. Let me ask you a question. If a dollar represents 100%, there's 100 pennies in a dollar, and you have to give 30 of those pennies to the government, that gives you 70. Now you've got to give another 10% of that 70 towards Obamacare, because that cost has to be put in there. Now you're going to have to give another 10%, another 10 pennies for immigration. If that happens, you will then be left with 50 cents on the dollar. Now what happens when you go buy a piece of buy bread, what are we going to do? Buy bread by the piece? Did you know that they're selling?
Well, then, Karen, I mean, you're in Florida. You guys don't have state tax in Florida, huh?
Florida, we have state. We don't have income tax.
Do you? Oh, okay. We have a state income tax, in the majority of the states, so we get an additional hit from our state, too, so we're left with less than 50%. But the erosion of the value of that 50 cents is what the killer is, and that's what inflation
right.
does. It takes away that value.
Every time he prints more money, John, what happens to the gas prices?
There you go. Everything, Karen. It has to happen.
It has to happen. Why does it have to happen? Because the price of gas is still the price of gas. And it still costs X number of dollars to get the gas out of the ground. And it still costs X number of dollars to transport it. And it still costs X number of dollars to get it to the filling station. And it's still, all of those are costs. If every single one of those costs goes up, what's going to happen?
Hey, Karen.
Yes.
What do you got, Sally?
A question for you. Two things to mention while we're talking about this. When you talk about the immigration thing, is the fact of the matter is everybody's income is going to go down, so you're getting a double whammy. Your cost of living goes up while your income comes down. But the other thing I wanted to mention, I don't know how much, remember the 15th was supposed to be that big amnesty rally, pro-jobs, anti-amnesty, by the Black Alliance in Washington. I saw one small clip of it on the news. I never heard another word about it.
Oh, well, you're never going to hear that because, drum roll, please, it was mixed. Those awful racist whites went and protested with their American brothers. And you will never see pictures of that because they will have to show that it was a black-white rally, and they won't be able to spin it. And what a shame. I saw some pictures on Victoria Jackson had some really good pictures. I think go take a look at them. From what they're saying, they said about 3,000 people, so that must have meant there were about 10,000 people, which even if there was 3,000 people, it was amazing for something going on in the middle of the week that people had to take time off from work to go to, and that blacks and whites stood together, and nobody paid attention. Nobody.
That's
and you're right, Sally.
They want to divide. That's all that this is about. It's all about dividing us and keeping us from being united. And I've often wondered, I mean, for the blacks who coordinated this, what they must have been thinking about what was happening on the other side.
The blacks that coordinated it, that's a good question, and I'm going to have to talk to my friend who went there and find out. And that's a really good question. I have no idea. But there were some wonderful speakers that I did know. And there were the fact to me that, A, it was peaceful, B, it was black and white, and C, that it was not reported shows me we are moving in the right direction. They are getting more and more scared about us uniting. And this is a wonderful example of being able to do that. And we should not drop the ball with this. This is something that we should continue. And we should work together for our schools and our families and our morals, because these are problems that are American values problems, and we should be able to solve them together.
Yeah.
So,
one of the I have a project I'm working on right now, Karen, and I shared it I guess a week ago on a radio show. I am taking the founding principles, and then I am cross-referencing them to the destruction of those principles and the total contrast of government, our legislation that is in place, our policymakers, everywhere where there's a contrast to our founding principles, it is stark and it is in total direct contrast. And I shared with an individual today who was taking me to task and saying that I wasn't recognizing the black perspective on the tray. And I said, well, look, I don't recognize that. I recognize one perspective. I recognize an American perspective. I recognize that in every man and woman, yes, there is racism. Yes, there is evil. But it is biblical that every man has in his will the possibility of doing both good and both evil. We can do both. We have choices. We can choose to be a racist, or we can choose not to have race in our conversation. We are humans that have the right and the freedom of choice. Freedom of choice. What a great idea. That's one of the founding principles. But the principle of equality is because we were all created by a great creator, and he made us all equal. And for these people now to try to divide and misrepresent what God, our creator, meant for mankind and humankind, that we should share everything alike, huh? If I get up and I go out and I work and I receive something, well, then it's mine to benefit from. But those founding principles, if we don't use that as the solution, if we don't go back, because that's what we have to do. We have to be an offer of a solution. And the solution is to stop the divide, unite as Americans. When these 100 city rallies or protests take place, stay at home. Stay at home with your family. Prepare yourself and be right. Have the conversation if you need to have a conversation with your children about race.
Right.
Have that conversation.
We have
but
to have
it
that
in the comfort of your home. Yes,
that's
we
right.
do.
We have to have
yes,
that conversation.
Do.
And when somebody said that to me also, and I said, what is the first, read this, what does it say? And it says, we the people. I said, it doesn't say we the white people. It doesn't say we the Jewish people. It doesn't say we the black people. It says we the people.
We the
and
people.
And that's what I believe. So therefore, as far as I'm concerned, the Constitution applies to everybody equally.
You know, Karen, I'm going to share something, too, because it's very real for me, because I am a child of the 60s, okay?
Me too.
And I can remember, and very fortunately, that we had this race conversation in the 60s. And I guess we may have learned a little bit quicker than Reverend Jackson or Al Sharpton or Barack Obama. Because I took it upon myself to look at my prejudices. I took it and held myself accountable as an American to look at who I was as a man. Was I a racist? I held myself accountable. If my prejudices were isolating me from what my America is supposed to look like, I dealt with John Estabrooks. I don't need Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Barack Obama, the NAACP, or anyone. I'm an American with a free will and choice to look at what is supposed to be for this great nation. And we are an exceptional people, and we have to scream at them, stop your lies, stop your division.
Well, you know,
we're an exceptional people. Allow us to be exceptional, God dog it.
Something good might come out of this. Because even though they seem to try to pump up all of this racial divide, it doesn't really go there. You can always get a group of people together, and they can always break windows in stores. That's a given.
Sure.
It doesn't have that feeling. It doesn't have that spark. It doesn't have that explosive feeling where all the people are angry. It doesn't have that anymore. And, you know, when you talk to somebody about racism now, I ask them, were you a slave? Did I put shackles on you and I made you into a slave? No. Is anybody in your family a slave? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Should I be mad at everybody? Should I be mad at the Egyptians for enslaving the Jews? Should I be angry at the Germans for killing the Jews? Should I be angry at everybody for killing the Jews? This is stuff that goes on. It is bad. It's horrible. But we're human beings. We are intelligent, and we have the ability to reason and think. And when that's not taught in school, this is the result. So again, I go back and I say we have to look at what we are teaching our children. We have to look at what we're teaching our kids, because these are learned things. They are things that are taught. And if we would teach about America and its goodness. You know, you like you just like you said, John, it's either good or it's bad. You can teach bad by teaching good because you use the good as the example of what you learned from the bad. That's why history
yes.
is so important, because you know
yep.
it was bad. So therefore, I'm not going to do that again. Man, if I know that I've stick my finger in that socket, I'm going to get a shock. Believe me, I'm not sticking my finger in the socket. I'm not going to put
yeah.
my hand under the chainsaw. I know what's going to happen. So if the child knows that in advance, they're not going to do the behavioral patterns that Trayvon did, that Rachel, Raquel Gentile did. Because I don't really believe that Trayvon, in his heart, thought one way or another about being a racist. I think he just used those words because that's what he was used to. And that's the sad part. That's the part that has to be changed. I remember in New Jersey in 1950, driving down to Deal, New Jersey, visiting my aunt and uncle in Asbury Park, and we passed a sign in Deal, New Jersey, and it said, "No dogs, no niggers, no Jews." That was in the
50s. Yeah.
When you take mm-hmm. away those words, you take away the history. You change things. That's what political correctness allows. So we don't learn and have a true understanding of what the words meant, of what the time meant, of what the experiences meant. When living in New York was a much bigger difference than living in the South. The blacks
yeah.
in the South were treated like the Jews in New York. That's why they relate so well. They were
but what did you feel, Karen?
Many,
I mean, and see, that's the we all go to what you know, and that was you know, as a child when you saw that, what did you feel, you know? And because I can remember my first run-in with racism, you know, and I come from Washington D.C. That's where my my mother was from. And when we left D.C. and my father being in the military, we ended up going into North Carolina. And guess what? There was a little bit of racism. You know, I mean, the Ku Klux Klan was still active,
right.
you know.
Now,
and as a child,
second,
it was like,
John.
why can't I play with a black child? You know?
That's right.
And have, yeah, I mean, it was like, I didn't understand it. It was like, hey, I don't understand this. Because guess what? I didn't share those prejudices. You know,
that's right.
It,
you
it was like, wow, I'm not fitting in.
That's right. I said to my mother, why are they saying that? We're not any different. And she said, because they don't know and they're afraid and they were taught to be afraid. And I said, oh, my God, that's
mm-hmm.
right. Because look at the categories of, you know, where we would be. Now, again, exactly as you said, growing up in New York, my mother and father had friends who were Indians from India. Black, we, you know, that was never a problem. We always got along and had wonderful friends and family who were black. Didn't make any difference. We had Chinese, Asian friends. It never was an issue. And what I enjoyed the most, was going to their church service, going to their house for dinner to celebrate a holiday, having a cultural experience with them, and then teaching them about America. It was a fabulous experience.
Yeah.
And a lot of that came from the school. Those were the things. And we learned words like melting pot. So everybody could come together under their own culture, but we all came together under America. And that's the
yeah.
piece. Those are the pieces that are missing today. And that's what we have to get back. That's what getting back and being an American is. And I think things like this past July 15th March, that was black and white. I think that was wonderful. I got a call from my my friend Dr. Myers, who's the head of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation, Barack Obama never said one word and did not like the idea that Juneteenth would stand for reconciliation and healing. He didn't like that.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm not surprised. It's who he is.
That's right.
It's who he is.
We have to get past
that. It doesn't match
that.
His design.
Right. God, America did not give God. He gave God. America was given to Americans through God. We all have a piece. And God did not say, oh, you six are going to control everything. He didn't say that. He said, this is equal for everybody. And when you don't teach that, it's lost. And when people don't learn it, they don't miss what they don't know, and they're willing to give it up because it has no meaning. So that's a heavy freedom and liberty given up because it has no meaning. This is what your children, what our children are being taught in school. Freedom and liberty are granted to you by what your government lets them have. Oh, my God, how awful is that?
But what if you're in a community, Karen? See, you, and this is the American conversation that has to take place. Now, you and I mean, if my childhood was in D.C. and it was a melting pot, New York a melting pot, but then when we look at the children of the South and we look at the Southern states and we have to remember our history of what the Civil War was to the South, it was a defeat. They were a defeated people who were then by the North. You know, I mean, our history is out there. I mean, we cannot run or deny that history, that when the North conquered and defeated the South was punished, and they held great resentment, and no one can take that away from the South. But we've had to, let me tell you something, I think more when I see a principled Southern man who has overcome his racism, who has stood firm in his Southernness, but he still stands as an American. It means something to me that he, because you know the history of what he as a child had to go through, because racism was a part of life on both sides. We can't deny that there was not, you know, racism doesn't exist in the black race. It does. It exists in all men, white, black, I don't care what your color is. Racism is a part of who we are. It's whether or not we choose to stay in that divide, or we choose to use the solution of overcoming that and standing united as a people and saying, I can accept you for your diversity. I can accept you for who you are by the content and character of your heart and mind. I will accept you if you accept me. And that's what we have made great strides as a nation. This president has done more to rip that apart and to shred it than any man in history. This it is demonic. It's evil. What this man is doing to this nation is evil, to divide and destroy what so many of us who struggled with the confrontation of who we were as humans to overcome racism, to now have him bring this back to the table is a lie. And for those that walk alongside of him and preach this lie, for us not to confront them openly and say, no more, Reverend Al, I won't listen to your garbage, you murdering bastard. And here's the thing. They have murdered untold millions of black women's babies in the womb. And Al Sharpton hasn't raised his voice one single time. Talk about Hitler. Talk about Mao Zedong. Look at what they've done through Planned Parenthood And all you've got to do is listen to Dr. Martin Luther King's niece and her personal story about having abortions performed on her without her knowledge and consent by Planned Parenthood people. And it took place in the 60s and the 50s. And Al Sharpton knows it. Jesse Jackson knows it. And now you want to bring up a black young man who attacked a man violently and got shot? Come on, guys. Tell the lie to someone that wants to believe it. I will not allow you to take away from me the strides that this great nation and the people of this nation have made to overcome the garbage of racism. It's garbage. We've known that. We struggle with it, yes, but we've overcome it. I confront people any time I hear a racist comment come from someone. I take them to task because guess what? I'm an American first. I stand as an American. I ask anyone, stand as an American for the love of God and your country. If we don't do this and stop this junk, this trash, they're going to take us all down.
Yes. Well, what a house.
I'm sorry, I got on a bandwagon.
Yeah, that's okay. It's a good rant. Good rant, John. A house divided cannot stand. And if the foundation of the house is built on sand, it's going to fall down. And we have to stop doing that right now, us guys, because we still have the power to do that. And this may be the last time we will ever have it, because we have the attention of the people. And we have to go out into our neighborhoods and talk to our neighbors and be a friend and offer a hand and don't allow the fear and the lies to divide you, because that's what fear and lies do. They divide.
Yes.
And we cannot have that happen anymore. We can't afford that as people. We can't afford that as a country. And we certainly should never want to pass that along to our children. We're giving them a house that has crumbled. You're giving them crumbs instead of the house that you built. And that is a very, very sad thing. Excuse me.
They deserve so much more, huh? That is the passion that I have for my nation, is because I have been blessed to live in this great nation. I've been blessed to be able to be educated and work in this great nation and to raise a family and to see my children and grandchildren. And my great hope is that I'm not giving them a destroyed, lesser America than my daddy and my grandparents gave to me. And because that's who we are. That's who we are as people. You know, we always want more for our babies than we had for ourselves.
And we need to focus on exactly that. You are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman. Please listen on redstatetalkradio.com and visit our website, agenda21today.com. and americaismyname.org. You're listening to Karen Schoen and John Estabrooks, and right now we're ranting about unity, which is the most important thing that we have together, because it is that glue together that makes us strong. And that's something else that we need to talk about, John, because as I have been talking to people and going around and meeting people, there are too many words floating around that people have no idea what they mean, and they're using them erroneously. And one of them came out with the idea when we were talking about Common Core about being a global citizen. And I do not believe that people understand what that really means. But before we go any further, Sally, are you still there?
Yep, I am here.
Okay, because we are looking for Michael Shaw when he that's available. So just chime in and stop us whenever he's available. Okay?
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you much. John, people
yes,
were told the Bill of Goods. They were told that America needed international trade. Okay? And everything was focusing on international trade. And then very sneaky, very, very sneaky, the word was changed from international trade to globalism. And there's a big difference.
Yes.
And we need to understand that, because we should be talking about globalism versus individualism. And I'm trying to figure out a way to have people relate to a thing that, you know, to something that is relatable, because this is stuff that is not being taught in civics class. International means when you trade with an international country, that country is still autonomous. If you're trading with Brazil, you're talking to Brazil. If you're trading with China, you're talking to China. Globalism means there is one world government under a new world order, and there are no boundaries. Now, doesn't that sound familiar, John?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am, it sure does.
And,
yeah,
what
and that's the pursuit, huh? Yeah, but
let me ask you,
Karen, because I'm going to lay on you exactly what I and just so I can see where you go, because I think I know where you're taking this. But what if I were to tell you, well, Karen, if you're against globalism, are you an isolationist? Are you a person who wants to isolate America from the rest of the world?
No, absolutely not. But I want the people of America to understand what America is about, so that they can also deal with any other country, because each country has their own set of rules. We do not live under one set of rules, and we have to respect the rules of all countries. So trading is a wonderful thing. Having people come here and learning about America is a wonderful thing. The problem is erasing the borders, and that says that a few people will determine the rules for massive amounts of people. Well, that's not
exactly
right. And I'm not happy with that. And this is what the idea of Common Core is all about. If you think about this, let's say you were going to play a football game, okay? And one team, or you were going to, there's two different ways to play the game, the American way or the globalism way. And let's say the American way is equated to the NFL. We're following those rules, okay? A set of rules is laid out for all the teams so that every team has a major set of rules to follow, so that I know that when we're on the field, if I do something to you, it will be considered a penalty. We all get it. We all understand it. We know what that is. Isn't that like our Constitution?
Sure.
You've got
Absolutely.
Your set of rules that everybody has to follow. Then you have a bunch of different teams. Each team is autonomous. They have their own name, they have their own colors, and they follow their own playbook, which is following the rules of the team, of the NFL, but also incorporating different plays and different ideas and different strategies to make them successful, just like the states would be doing, so that you have all different teams, just like you have all different states. Now, each team is going to work feverishly to be the best that they can be. Why? So that they can get the reward of what being the best means, like a trophy, like a ring, like lots and lots of money, which they would get to keep. So that would be the American way of playing a game. Now, if you took the globalism way as being outlaid in Common Core and in what they say, you would be playing like this. So you have the team set up under the globalism, but it's a living, breathing set of rules. And it changes every time anybody plays. So every time the team goes out to play, it could be a different set of rules because it's a living, breathing document, and it has to move and wiggle with life. It's not concrete. Okay, well, how do you play the game like that? Okay, well, each team, under the American way, has their own rules. Under the globalist way, every team has the same playbook. So there's no deviation. Nobody could do anything different. Everybody knows that if you go out and the ball is kicked to the 30-yard line, no matter who you are, no matter what you're doing, your team has to kick a field goal or has to kick towards the field goal. Those are the rules. Everybody's got to follow the exact same rules. Now, at the end of the game, I don't know how you could have a winner, because you can't. Because they're following the same rules, they're playing the same game, there's no deviation, so we'll give them all a trophy for showing up, because that's what they're doing. They're showing up. Okay, now, people came to see the game, so there's money that's involved. But that's not your money, that's the team's money. And as the team manager, I get to decide how much money you have. Now, which game would be more interesting to watch, would breed more success, would be more stimulating, and would be way above the other? The idea of globalism doesn't work. Everybody can't do the same thing at the same time. It's impossible. How can you have rules if they change all the time? What would happen, John, if you went out to kick the field goal and every time you went to kick the goal, moved the goalpost?
Yeah.
Did you ever kick a
field
goal?
Well, that's what's being done, Karen.
That's exactly what's being done. How?
And you know, let me break that down for folks, because I know we've said it in the past, and I've made the same. The same analogy for people and stated the same fact. We have documents from some of the think tanks to where the globalists, in pursuit of what they could do to equalize the entire workforce of the globe with regards to annual income. And the question was posed to the think tanks, how do we globalize the entire world workforce? You know, can we bring everyone at that time when these conversations were taking place? The United States of America had the wealthiest middle class, working class on the planet, and we still do. But the question was posed, can we bring the entire world workforce to the equal status of the Americans? And it came back, the think tanks came back to the global cons, the bankers and the people that want to, you know, have a great single workforce, that no, there's not enough money, you can't print enough money, you can't possibly put enough money in circulation to boost the annual income of the world's workforce to the level of the Americans. Number one, the Chinese are being held back because they're under socialist rule. The Russians are under communist rule. So these people are, that's not even a possibility. They won't discuss allowing their people, their workforces, to have $47,000 a year. So what we have to do, and then this was given, these documents exist. What was required by the globalist was to destroy and redistribute the wealth of the American working class to the rest of the third world nations. Now, if that's not taking place today, somebody pointed out to me, because it is. It absolutely is. And we have the numbers, we have the truth and the facts.
And what do they tell everybody? Not to worry, you will level the playing field. Only they never told you that they're going to level you down to the rest of the world. Now, won't that be nice when you're making a dollar a day, because isn't that what the Chinese make?
Well, here's the truth, Karen. And because I get to travel travel globally,
right.
I get to see what is taking place in Brazil and Trinidad and South Korea. I get to go to these great places, Singapore, and guess what they think of Americans?
And they think we're
that they have been told, number one, that we're very spoiled people, that we have too much, and that we need to share with them, and they are tickled pink, because guess what's happening to their annual income as they redistribute and destroy ours by as much as $10,000 a year now. So they've destroyed ours and taken it from $47,000 to $37,000, and they've redistributed that around to these people that are now making more money than they've ever made in their life, and they're happy. But guess what they're also? They're also convinced that Americans are fat, greedy people that are not happy with their success.
Right.
What a great lie.
That's right. And guess who's telling them those stories when they go overseas? Guess where they're getting them from? You think from the Secretary of State, maybe, or maybe our Chief Justice, who says, oh, that Constitution, I wouldn't want everybody to have that one. Ugh, that one is yucky. Isn't that what Ginsburg said when she went on her Palestinian trip? We can't give them, Egypt, we can't give them the same constitution like the American Constitution. We should be following some other constitution, right? And then she's the Chief Justice. How exciting that is. But you're absolutely
and
right.
And our president, the president's great apology tour, to go all over the world and all over the Middle East and tell people just how terrible it is that the Americans and their imperialist goals have destroyed their lives, and that no more under his presidency we will all become equal.
Oh, I can hardly wait.
Well, it's against the Constitution. That's the first thing I would tell him.
I know. Now, here's another thing I don't think people understand, and that is American Constitution says equal justice. It is set up for all men to be created equal and all men to participate in the exact same rule of law. And what that means is, the rule is not going to change for John or Karen. If you go to a street corner and the light is red, it means it's red, period. And you have to stop, period. And it doesn't matter whether you are a gazillionaire or riding a bicycle. When the light is red, you stop. That's what equal justice means. The law is equal. What they are promoting is social justice. And I don't think people realize that there is a difference. And social justice means, as John was talking about, people divided into groups. And your group will get some form of subsidy, which another group won't get. So that eventually each group will get something different. And then me, as the controller of all of these groups, I could go over to you and I could say, yo, John, Karen's group just got an extra cheese doodle. And you didn't get it, John, and she got more than you did. And that's what is the creation of the problems that we had. So social justice allows the government the ability to separate people into groups, give them different items, and then pit them against each other. And what we have now is the pitting against each other part. So I have stopped. I had a wonderful friend when I was in school that really taught me about this. And his name was Sam Garcia. And because he was Jewish, and because his last name was Garcia, on every box he would put Hispanic. He got, imagine all of the things he got. He got free tuition, he got food stamps, you name it, he got it. He got an open door into programs that nobody else got just because he put Hispanic on the box. That's what social justice means. Why should he have gotten something that I didn't get? Just because of a last name, not because of ability, not because of work ethic, not because I earned it or deserved it, not because it was mine, but just because of a last name and a check in a box. And that's social justice. And that is un-American. And that creates the problems and the issues that we have today. Because if every individual was taking care of their own individual rights and freedoms and person and life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness because they were taught to, because they understood that their actions have consequences, and they would be able to use their skills to determine, as John said, whether it's right or wrong. But when that ability is taken away, what do you have to draw on? When people don't have an answer, they get frightened. They want to have an answer. They want to know what the answer to the question is. They want to know what the right thing to do is. If they haven't learned how to do it, they get frightened. And when they get frightened, they are willing to give away something to stop the pain, stop the fear. And this is what our government, what Obama plays upon in his Saul Alinsky tactics of never letting a good crisis go to waste and promoting crisis. I think he should maybe get an A in crisis management because that's about all he does, creating the crisis and then managing it. Because he certainly is managing it, although I can't give him a success rate for managing it. I don't think his success rate of management is very high. Oh, John, we did not hear from you about our energy. What is going on now that we are having all of these fighting and everything going on in the Middle East? I'm seeing the gas prices chugging up. What's happening?
Well, I mean, speculators understand that as Egypt goes, so does the canal. I mean, you know, the oil that is exported from the Middle East, Egypt has control over the waterway that lets the water come and go. I mean, the oil come and go. So if the oil is not able to be transported, and there's a risk of that with the upheaval in Egypt, so now you have speculators. Who always drive the price of oil on anything that is disruptive in the Middle East, oil prices always will go up. And along with the natural inflation of printing $85 billion every month. So energy prices are going up. Gas prices will go up and spike. And, you know, they will, as per our other documents that we have from the think tanks, social pricing, not free market economy, now sets the price of oil and gas, and we know that price has been set to, they hope to maintain it from $80 to $100 a barrel. So the last I saw, and once it breaks over 100, I kind of get dizzy, and I want to say it was at 106 maybe headed toward 107 per barrel. So not good for the American consumer and the hardworking American who probably is not having a wage increase, but they're definitely going to see food cost increases, because if I have to transport by anything that burns diesel and gas, then guess what? The cost naturally has to go up, and the consumer always bears the burden. And so how's that working for us that we're not drilling on federal lands?
Right.
And that's
you know,
that continues.
Think about the stupidity of these policies, because what did Jimmy Carter say when he put in the Department of Energy? Oh, my goodness, if we drill ourselves, it'll take us 10 years to make a difference. That was in the 70s.
Yeah.
We're now
in
76. 2013. 2012, 2013, 2014. How many years ago was that? Oh, we can't do that. Who else said that? I think Bush said the same thing. Oh, it'll take us so many, 10 years to be energy independent. Well, you know what, folks? 10 years seems to fly by pretty quickly. And that doesn't hold anymore. That doesn't make sense anymore. So...
Well, you know, Karen, there was a great lesson on my trip to South Korea. The one thing that that I got to see is, you know, if you have the will and you have the desire, you can easily put in infrastructure for LNG to burn for vehicles. So we could be burning liquefied natural gas in American vehicles and saving the American consumers. Because guess what? We have a huge abundance of cheap, affordable, clean, burning natural gas. But why is it that we're not putting in the infrastructure? And, you know, we pull up to a gas station and we can get diesel and we can get gasoline. Well, why can't I go over at the same gas station, if I choose to have a little vehicle that burns LNG, and fill up on some liquefied natural gas? Why is that? Because guess what, America? The rest of the world's doing it because it's cheap.
I mean,
and it's redistributing
exactly right.
Your wealth.
That's right. They can't steal from us when we do that, because it's ours. We'd be paying ourselves, oh, my God. We wouldn't be spending our hard-earned dollars overseas for pricing that is outrageous on purpose. Remember, I think the only truth that Obama ever said was when he said, if you stick with me, the energy prices will necessarily skyrocket. I think that was about the only time he was telling the truth, because the rest of it...
Well,
then
he was
going to
transform...
Oh, yes, he was going to transform America. Yes, I remember that one. He absolutely was going to do that, and he sure is putting his best foot forward on that one. So those two things. But coincidentally, did you know that we're giving $7 billion to South Africa so they can develop oil, natural gas, and coal?
Well, let's see. $7 billion there, $2 billion Brazil, $2 billion Mexico, Venezuela. Well, I guess it's very important that we take care of third world nations, and who cares about... I wonder if anybody has taken the math, and if you divide all those billions amongst 300 million, what kind of paycheck could the American people get if we've got this much money to go around the world throwing at their development of energy? Man, it's like... I'm a logical guy, and I only speak the truth about what I see as logic. And money kept at home and distributed for American exploration of energy for how many billions of how far would those billions, $7 billion go into putting in infrastructure in places like California, where they have such a great need for natural, clean-burning energy? If I put LNG in California, that $7 billion would probably get some of that infrastructure underway and started, and keep American dollars and create American jobs. What a novel idea.
Yes. Why don't you run for office, John? You've got such a great approach. such a new and refreshing approach. You are absolutely right. It is the same thing all around, and until the people understand mathematics, that's the biggest challenge. They don't understand mathematics. They don't. When you said take 7 billion and divide it by the 300 million people, their heads went off a cliff. But you have to figure the people would be getting about, each person, each of us, about $2 million. Folks, that's a lot of money, $2 million. You just gave away $2 million of your very own money. Gee, that would have paid for somebody's house, you think? That would have paid so that somebody wouldn't be in foreclosure. That would pay so that people wouldn't have problems worrying about jobs. My goodness, we wouldn't need food stamps. We wouldn't need government assistance. We wouldn't be able to stimulate more debt so that when we can't pay it and China says, I want my money, we're going to have to say to China, see that mountain over there filled up with oil? Oh, we're going to have to give that one to you. Folks, that's what this is about. This has nothing to do with, as John said, the solution. The solution, one of the best, is natural gas. Of course it's one of the best. It's one of the easiest. It's one of the fastest that we would be able to maintain, that we'd be able to get our hands on, and think of all the jobs that it would create. But then it wouldn't create a society that was beholden to the government. It would create a society that people were beholden to themselves. And I really don't believe that the majority of the people who are on government assistance would not be happier if they were productive themselves. I don't believe that when I see these numbers about the amounts of people on government assistance, I'm very saddened that they're there. But I don't really believe they want to stay there. I believe that somewhere in there is an American spirit. And if they understood what they were giving up, and again, I am not talking about the people who are disabled or unable. I am talking about the able-bodied Americans who are being forced on government assistance because there are no jobs. Those are the people that I'm talking about. I don't believe they want to stay there. I don't believe they're happy. I think they understand what's going on, and I think they want to do something about it, and that's where we come in. So your job, everybody's job, is to go make a new friend and start talking to people. I did that, John. I went into one of the supermarkets and I started talking to some people that were there. It was fun. I met new people. So now I decided I'm going to meet a new person every day.
Looks like something. Just so you know, it looks like John dropped off. I don't know whether he got disconnected or what, so hopefully he's going to call back in here. But just so you,
oh,
just
well,
so
that
you know.
Is possible. No, I'm talking to myself.
No, you were not talking to me. I was listening.
No, okay.
But this thing about the income, well, first off, just so you know, I did see something where it said Pennsylvania Avenue was blocked for half an hour. With the Black Alliance protest going on. And so there was something going on, but, of course, we know the media is not going to cover it. But the whole thing, this amnesty, it's not only trying to get people to understand the games being played with Obamacare, which will, the mandate with the not enforcing the mandate for the companies, and how that by itself, they give every advantage to the companies to hire non-Americans and to cut American jobs, cut their full-time jobs to part-time so they don't have to pay for Obamacare. And this is where people are going to – you got two whammies. You got the influx of the illegal non-Americans that are now going to be legalized going after the same jobs, and now your pay itself is going to be cut because many, many people – are being cut from full-time to part-time, so your income is cut, and at the same time, when they cut it, you are now responsible to pay the mandate of the health insurance. So you're getting truly three whammies here of what's going to totally take down your quality of life for the average middle-class American.
And unfortunately, that's the goal, folks. And you know what? We don't have to stand for that. We really, really don't. And, yeah, there's going to be an election in 2014, but you know what? Between now and then, we've got mouths, and we need to be using them. And saying no and protesting is what we have to be doing. And I go back to what Egypt did. Look at what Egypt did. Good, bad, or indifferent. Those people stood up for themselves. Now, we may not like the road they chose, but they chose it. It wasn't handed to them, force-fed to them, because when they saw what that future looked like, they said, no, we're not going to go there. We don't want that. That's not what this was about. They didn't want a dictator to be replaced with another dictator. Well, folks, we have a dictator in the White House, and the word for the day should be impeachment. Because every indication shows... Oh, you're back, John. Wonderful.
Yeah, I had a little rain fade.
The word for the day is impeachment. Because impeachment means we get to stop all of the programs that were put in place. And the programs are equally as devastating as the person who's putting them there. And the fact that he's going outside of Congress is our fault. That's us. I blame that one on us. We are not doing enough holding our legislators' feet to the fire. We are not doing enough hounding them. We are not doing our part. So therefore, we are allowing them to vote the way they want. And the best day I had was when all those pink slips went out to Marco Rubio. But you know what? That was only one thing. That was only one thing. Look at what's going on in the House. Look at that farm bill. I don't think there's any big corporation that doesn't get compensated in some way, shape, or form. And any little farmer is going to get squashed. I had a conversation with some of the farmers in my area, John. I cannot believe what they have to go through now. In order to get their food to go to, you know how like Walmart and Publix and Winn-Dixie and the local supermarkets, they always have grown from local farms. In order for them to have that done now, they have to have a special inspection measuring things like how far away is the poop from the vegetables, or what is the what kind of facilities are used. They're tagging the animals' ears to make sure that they know what they're eating, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The inspection is $25,000. $25,000. You know how many vegetables you got to sell to make $25,000?
Well, you can't sell enough, Karen.
No,
that's
you can't.
That's the bottom line for anybody that tries to start a farmer's market, you know, and people, you know, because that's the mission. Force the small guy out. When corporations are in charge of it all, and there'll be some public-private partnerships for farming. You know, it's going to be necessary. It'll necessary be that the government has a partner in this. And guess what? The corporations, once they have weeded through the small independent farmer, the family farm, and what a disgrace, because that. To me and my thinking, and from because my wife's mama and daddy were farmers. Her grandparents were farmers. That's how they lived. That's how my wife was raised, on a farm working rice, and so understanding what a small farmer goes through, and just how hard that work is. And everything that they give to the land and as caretakers, you know, and to have that ripped out from underneath them by government agencies and over-regulation, what you can fertilize what you can't fertilize with, what pesticide you is approved, what seed It is deplorable, but what's deplorable is that we as Americans have not paid close attention to the plight of the family farmer. You know, when did Willie Nelson, you know, that's been, what, well over a decade, you know, when we had Farm Aid. We should have united then, and we didn't.
We didn't.
Until we were confronted with the absolute evil that, you know, I think from the George W. Bush administration forward, that we all became very clear that that this global economy, the two unfunded wars, the cost, the destruction of the economy, then when it started to reach down to us, we started to politically become active, and now we're an enlightened patriot movement with great, I mean, I think that we have great hope. I share with people all the time, if we restore religion in our lives, morality in our lives, and we pursue fact-based history to our children and our grandchildren, it's a duty that we have to take on, regardless of what Common Core happens, if it takes place or not. As a mama, a daddy, a grandparent, we owe it to our babies to give them a fact-based education, because trust me, it may get worse before it gets better, but it can only get better if we have people in place to take our place, because there's an effort afoot. There's an effort afoot in this nation to outlast John and Karen. You know, they would love it if our generation would cease to be. Then all I say is that they missed their mark and they missed their timing. We're not going to go quietly into the night. We're going to stand as Americans. We're going to unite. We're going to spread the truth. We're not going to stop. And we won't allow the destruction of the family farm. They may get away with it temporarily, but guess what? These corporations that have cut these deals with government officials are just as guilty as of treason as the government official that takes the lobbyist dollars. Because that's who, this is a corporatocracy. It's not a democracy. It's not a republic. It's a corporatocracy. And these corporations, all of them that we work for, every one of us that are surviving and just getting by, are doing it at their behest. And guess what? They're accountable for the same treason as the public official that marries them. And that's what they've done. The agencies know exactly what they're doing when they destroy the independent family farm. And that's the effort. Yep. They don't want you to have the right to raise a few chickens and sell some eggs. Oh, no, no, no. Have those eggs been properly inspected? Oh, well, if they haven't been, you can't sell them at this market. Come
that's
on,
right.
Folks.
And then you know what else they're doing? In the sustainability plans, folks, they have to put in a farmer's market as a way to help the local farmer. Okay, so I have a question for the local farmer. If the farmer's market is only opened on one day a week, what do you do with the fresh food that you pick in the beginning of the week? Now it becomes 3 day old, 4 day old, 5 day old, 6 day old, 7 day old. Oops, it's spoiled. Oops. You didn't make any money. Don't be suckered in with farmers markets. There's nothing. Oh, it is a great thing to drive by in the country and to see on the edge of someone's property fresh grown produce, and you stop by and you have a conversation, and we love to get the honey from the area or some of the goodies that the people have made with recipes that you'll never find with food that doesn't taste like plastic. It's amazing, and it's part of America. This was our culture. I mean, these were things. Going to the farm when we were kids, we had a summer cottage that we took refuge in, but it was right up in the farming country, upstate New York, and going to the farm was probably one of the nicest experiences that I ever had. You learned about vegetables. You learned how they grow. You learned what to do. You learned what was important. You learned how to take care of your body. You learned what to eat. All of those came from farming and the farmers. And now to be told that, oh, a new rule they're going to put in place in Florida, the trucks, the distribution trucks, can't drive onto a farm because they may have bacteria that might get on the food. You believe
that?
So what?
Well, I'm going to tell you what, Karen. You know, in this conversation, that is the one thing that is a solution, and it will become a clear solution. I think at a rapid pace, we are going to have to become reliant on each other. We're going to have to support Americans. So when you, rather than just drive by that guy that's got his produce set out in his front yard or in the back of a truck and just drive by and go into Walmart and buy the foreign produce, perhaps wise Americans will take the time and stop and support your local family farms. Take the time. Take your money and invest your money wisely in the future of another American, so that guy can survive. They need us to survive. We need each other.
We need and learn from him. Learn of something that you can do, something that you can share. Frank, my husband, got into growing up trees. Well, he started working with one of the farmers, and the farmer gives him the raw roots, the little roots of the tree, and Frank likes to make it grow so that it then becomes a 3 or 4 foot trees, and then he brings it back and sells it back to the farmer, who then turns around and sells it in his nursery. It's really cool. You're learning from each other. You're learning survival skills, which are always wonderful, but you're learning how things grow, the way things work, what needs to be done. You have a different appreciation of life and nature. And then this is where being good stewards of the earth is important. You don't need somebody to tell you not to kill the stupid turtle. You don't need somebody to tell you not to kill the bird. When you're working outside, you learn not to do that. You learn what's important. You learn what's not important. You don't need the government to tell you. And then, to make matters worse, John, what are they doing? This farm bill? Where is the provision in the farm bill that says that they should be labeling the GMOs?
Oh, Lord.
I didn't see that there. So when my representative sent me his latest email about how he's working so hard on the farm bill, I wrote back and I said, yeah, I see that, but I think you're missing something, and it says GMO labeling. I think you forgot that one. Well, guess who never got an answer? Because now on the bottom of the emails and the letters that I send them, I write, do not send back one of your usual boilerplate letters. If you don't have an independent thought, don't contact me.
Well, that's great.
What
a waste of time to get that garbage. Yeah.
I haven't been getting
and that's what they. I mean, that's what they have got well-trained staff to do. Just kick out the same mm-hmm. garbage to us day after day, and it gets old. That's a pretty good idea, Karen. I need to.
I haven't used that one,
so I've learned something today.
Well, the other day, I wrote a letter and I said, "Dear useful idiot." By the way, that's the name that the left calls you. And you know what else I started doing when I talk about kids? I started calling them human capital. That's what they call them. They call them that in Common Core. They call them that in Race to the Top. People need to understand that this is what they think of our children. They think of them so little that they call them human capital. I can't can't believe that. I couldn't believe that.
Well, you need to, that. You know, Karen, that was another thing when I was in South Korea. I did kind of investigate that too, because they have fully implemented Agenda 21 and sustainable development. The length of time that their human capital spends in school versus America. You know, our kids get a 5-day work week. Well, those children go 6 days and year round. I mean, that's it. And they are held they're held to task, and they are being trained
not
to fit
educated.
The needs of the South Korean economy. Okay? That's the system. You know, they're not being educated to go be doctors, attorneys, or whatever it is that that child or parent may choose. The human capital is being trained to meet the needs of the global future for South Korea. You know, where are they going to fit in to the shipyard? Where are they going to fit in to Samsung if Samsung has needs for engineers? Where are they going to fit in to the global economy needs of South Korea? That's it. They're upfront about it. I mean, that's the education. There's no, you know, there's no public education like we've got here in America. Well, we don't have it anymore. I mean, they're destroying it on a daily basis at that's the biggest, fastest pace that I see is the indoctrination process for our education system, so that these kids, once John and Karen do go away, you know, if we can fight them for another decade, we'll be fortunate. And then, how far along will they be in the indoctrination process in a decade? You know, it'll all be behind us.
And you know what? Being a solution-based people. Being solution-based, here's a challenge. Go to your school board. And when your school board says to you, we can't change what's going on in the state, ask them why you're paying them. If they can't make any independent decisions, what do you need them for? That's number one. And number two, ask them, since they signed on to something that they have absolutely no idea what the results are going to be, and the results that have come in from the states that have implemented it are deplorable, 80% of the children that graduate in New York City cannot read and write, thank you, Common Core. Therefore, you want to set up a test program. Tell them you'll meet the standards of Common Core, because standards are standards. If a standard says a seventh grader should be able to read eight-letter words and do compound sentences, that's a standard. The question is, what are they reading to do that? So you tell them you will meet the standards of Common Core, but you want a school that is dedicated to the content that you choose, and then start working on, and anybody can contact us, agenda21today.com, info@agenda21today.com, or kbshone@bellsouth.net. We have a copy of the Texas curriculum, so it is not even an issue to say we don't have a curriculum. We have a curriculum. There are plenty of wonderful American educational tools that you can use, and create a school in your district that focuses on American values, and tell them, we want to have an American school in our district, and we will compare it to Common Core, and then we will see which is better, or perhaps we'll keep both, but that's a choice. People telling you is not a choice. In America, we, the people, are in control, not they, the government. They only have control because we, the people, haven't taken it. You know, there's only one baton. And if I give it to John, it means I don't have it anymore. So I want to keep the baton. I want my team to be the winner. I want my team to hold that baton. I don't want to give it away to another team. because then I'll never see it again. So we're all on the same team. It's called Americans. And right now, we have the baton, if we use it. And the question is, will we use it? And that's where we need to reevaluate ourselves and see who we are and realize that we need truth, education, conversation, and action. Well, John and Karen have brought you the truth. We have given you educational tools to work with. We have had a wonderful conversation, and now it's time for action. So what are you guys going to do with all of this information? Make an action plan and meet with other like-minded people in your community and work on a plan of action, because there's absolutely no reason in the world that you cannot say, I don't want this in my community, whatever it is. Because any rule, any law that supersedes the Constitution doesn't exist, not constitutional. There isn't anything that's more important than the Constitution. And there isn't one place in the Constitution that mentions education. No place. Doesn't say it. Because it was a community-based thing to do. Community-based. You know, John, I went on the internet today, and I pulled up a test from the 1900s. No wonder why they said they went to eighth grade and then they stopped. They were doing college material in the eighth grade.
Uh-huh.
They didn't need to go any further
than
the eighth
grade.
And,
you know, There was a point in time, Karen, where, you know, we really believed that our children were learning more than we learned. And you know, you just because you heard that from your, you know, I can remember my mom and dad saying, you know, how much further along we were in math and the fact that we were studying algebra, science, you know, where we were with chemistry. And thinking that, you know, well, we never saw that in school, and you guys are. But then when it made this shift, I guess we just didn't pay attention. When the dumbing down started to take place and our children weren't coming out as smart as we were.
Nope.
You know, when did that? Because that's it's a sad statement of fact. Our children are not as competent at logic, at critical thinking. They were not taught logic and critical thinking, because guess what? You can't put communism in place with logic. When logic and critical thinking exist, a citizen will rebel and fight against it.
Right.
But if I have little indoctrinated socialists, they'll accept it.
Right. What was it? I think it was Lenin. what did he say? That an educated populace requires too much resources from the government.
Yeah.
So best be they make them dumb so that they will require nothing. But all of that happened the teachers were trained up until about the late 80s. And then in 89, Shirley MacLaine went to the Governors Association, those little governors, they're back again. They brought us Common Core. They brought us this, too. But anyhow, she was from the McReel Foundation. George Bush, president, 41. Bill Clinton, president of the Governors Association. Look at how those names are kind of sort of linked together again in that one party surprise. Cheryl went to the Governors Association, and she made three very startling statements. And she said was, the human capital will be trained to work. That was the first statement. The second statement was, individualism will be replaced by collectivism. Where have we heard that before? And the last one she said was that a fact-based education was no longer necessary. And America will be transformed. And since 1989, look at their success. Look at their success. Our founding
fathers. Well, I mean, if I've indoctrinated teachers to that belief, and I've trained the teachers that are now teaching in the public school system, that very indoctrination, then they will accept the next level of indoctrination that we've got with Common Core. They will implement it. They'll let it happen.
Exactly. And we are up to the third generation, our generation.
Mm-hmm.
When I was trained, I was one of the teachers who was trained how to psychologically manipulate. And then I was supposed to be training other teachers. And when I realized that it was training of communism, I even stopped going for my doctorate. I just stopped. I said, I am not doing this. This is communism, and I'm not teaching anybody how to do that. And my doctorate was supposed to be from the New School of Social Research, which was, as far as I'm concerned, John Dewey's star for the modern education of psychological manipulation. So all of that training at least gave me an understanding, but the training of the teachers really ended in the 80s. And then the education went into the classrooms under what Shirley described. And guess what? We had school to work, and then we had Goals 2000, and then we had Sustainable America, and then we had No Child Left Behind, and now we have Common Core, and they're all the same program. The only thing that was changed has been the name. So, on a very sad note, that's the history of education and missing America from education. And that's our job, just like John said. You're right on, John. It doesn't matter what the school says. It matters what goes on in the home. You cannot let school become your child's family. They are not. And they are not there to help your children. That's your job. They are not there to improve. They are not there to educate. They are there to train, period. And they tell you that all the time. So don't be fooled in thinking that they are planning on educating, because there is no education when it is told to you. They are training. That's all they're doing. They're training. It's your job to do the education. And education is one of the most important pieces that we have, that is our protection. Education is the only thing. It is the thread that binds us all together, which gives us the ability to follow the rule of law and to protect our rights and our liberty and our property. And if we don't have an education, and we can't read and write, and we can't read and write cursive, the names that they call those people are called slaves and serfs. And I don't want to see that for any American. And on that note, I think we may have lost John. He's out on a rig today.
Yep.
We get used to that, but he's such a good guy. I love talking to him. I have such a good time. I really enjoy this, and I know he does too. And I don't think he'll make it back in time. We are experiencing some turbulence. So we will say good night and be back again next week. And thank you all for joining John and Karen tonight. Sorry, John isn't here to say good night. And Sally, thank you, Sally, for joining us. You are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American.com, American Statesman, and on RedStateTalkRadio.com. Please listen. share our information with your friends. Above all, take action. Visit our websites, agenda21today.com, saveamericafoundation.com, americaismyname.org, and remember, above all, victory is our only option. Good night.